You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
You're listening to the ESPN Footy Podcast.
G'day everybody, welcome back to Red Time for another week. Matt Walsh here with you today alongside Jake Michaels, stepping in for Jared Barker, who's normally here on a Thursday. Jake, there are plenty of interesting and fun topics to get to on Red Time
there
today.
Are.
Ahead of Gather Round, of course, you're heading across. Looking forward to going to Adelaide and seeing some footy?
I am. It should be fun. I didn't go last year, so excited to be going to my first Gather Round. Although I noticed you said welcome back to the show. This is your first appearance on the show.
Oh, just welcoming the audience back. It's just a nice thing to do.
It's good to have you on Thursday. You normally take the day off, so good to have you in.
Happy to be here. Let's get straight into it, I guess. So first topic for the day. We're a month into the season now. Who are the genuine contenders?
Yeah, so I think a lot of people look at the ladder and just sort of pick the top four out and say, well, they're the teams to beat. They're the ones that have started well. I don't necessarily think so. With some of these, you'll find, but not with all of them. I think there's four clear-cut contenders after the first month, if we want to call it, of the season. It's clearly the Giants. They've looked like the best team so far. We've spoken about it on this podcast, I think, a couple of Tuesdays ago. They tick every box.
Yep.
Defensively, in the midfield, forward line, they're doing everything well so far. Hard to fault them at all. Carlton, we know they're going to be a better side this year than what they were last year. You would think that that 9-week period doesn't happen again. Looking strong early to start the year after the shaky first half against Brisbane, that is, but looking strong since there. Melbourne, another team that started a little shaky in their first game, but it's just grown into the season so far. And Sydney. I think they're the four sides that have put a bit of a gap on everyone else right now. And I think if we're being honest, they're the four sides that probably are the genuine contenders. And I'm not sure that there are any others. Now, people will point to Collingwood and maybe to a lesser extent Brisbane and say
last year's grand finalists.
Yeah, genuine contenders. And what I would say to that is, if it wasn't for what we know of last year, would you consider that? If Collingwood didn't win the premiership last year, would you say they are a contender this year?
No, not the way they've been playing.
On what we've seen.
I think you can easily make the argument, however, that we have seen what they've been able to do, and both teams have the ability, you think, at some point to
find
that groove
again. But do you think they can do that again? That's the thing.
Yeah, I think they can, whether that's too late for the premiership run. I think that's the important thing here, is that they're these games behind already. So they're not only, you know, they're not in the middle of the mix. They're down towards the lower reaches of the ladder, meaning the games behind these genuine contenders like the Giants, the Demons, the Swans, the Blues. And then there are undefeated teams. So Fremantle and Geelong still haven't lost yet, but you're not counting them as a genuine contender?
No, I published my tiers for April a couple of days ago, and those two sides were in their own little tier of great record, but they're not winning the flag. And I'm pretty strong on this. I don't think either of them have beaten any side that we think is any good. The Dockers beat Brisbane, but now we know what they're like. So it's hard to sort of say, well, was that a good win or was that not a good win? I don't think either of them are a genuine premiership contender. Geelong probably a little closer, but then you look at the midfield, I just think it's too thin and there are too many holes. The best players are the older players. We will see now with, you know, Dangerfield not playing, and just you're relying on a lot of unknowns with the Cats. And it's the same with the Dockers. Too many unknowns and too many players that we're hoping to get more out of. And I want to see it for an extended period, and I want to see it against good teams.
Fair enough.
Moving on. Chris Fagan, speaking of Brisbane, poor start to the year.
Yes.
Is he now the most under pressure coach in the competition?
He's under a lot of pressure, I think, because... And it's kind of difficult because you look at the success, or you know, the relative success of the Lions over many years, and you think, wow, he's made semi-finals, he's made prelims, he's made a grand final, and you think, oh, you're pretty happy to have that. You want to lock down a coach like that for as long as you can. But the reality of football is minor tweaks here and there can produce different results. And so you know, some aspects of Brisbane's supporter base might think, you know, if we bring in someone with some fresh ideas with the talent we have on the list, that might be enough to tip us over the edge, a la Collingwood bringing in McRae, and all of a sudden it really clicked for the Magpies. But the other, you know, the other sort of the flip of the coin is you get rid of the guy, the mastermind, and everything falls apart. I think he's under a lot of pressure. I think it, you know, when you have gotten so close without getting the ultimate success, you know, a la some other coaches in the league. You talk about Luke Beveridge, you talk about Chris Scott, Adam Simpson as well. He doesn't have those runs on the board per se, so he's going to be under pressure, but I don't think he's the most under pressure in the league. I think that's Matthew Nix at the moment. A lot was made about what the Crows were going to be.
Who just signed a contract extension.
2-year extension, and there was a lot of expectation surrounding Adelaide. Of course, they missed finals by what would have been, not even a kick. They missed it by a wrong umpiring decision.
Yep.
And so the expectation was they would continue to improve as their trajectory has been, and they've been woeful, quite frankly, to start the season, and are in a real danger of going 0-4. When they play tonight. You'll probably know the result of this, depending on when you're listening
to this given
match.
That contract extension for Nix, there's no way they can get rid of him this year.
There absolutely is, yeah. I think there absolutely is.
I don't
is.
Think there is. I don't think that they can give him that contract extension and then turn around in 3 or 4 weeks' time or through two months' time.
The
and
natives
say,
are already restless.
I think it's far more likely that in 10 weeks' time, Chris Fagan won't be at Brisbane than Matthew Nix not being at the Crows. I just don't understand. I don't see how they can possibly give that extension and then go back weeks later.
Well, I'm not saying he's going to get fired, but I think he's the most under pressure. I think he's to perform. Nix is the guy who's the most under pressure at this point. From what we've seen so far in 2024, and I guess with the benefit of hindsight, Jake, should West Coast have traded pick one last year instead of drafting Harley Reid?
Well, speaking of sides that are struggling, the Eagles, and it's been a common theme for a number of seasons now. I think the answer to the question is clearly yes, they should have explored it. Now, it's not
this is a controversial take, but explain your reasoning. I'm interested.
Yeah, well, I don't think it's that controversial. I think most people probably feel a similar way. It's not a knock on Harley Reid. He's come in. He's been pretty solid to start with. He may develop into one of the game's best players, as a lot of people expect. I don't think anyone doubts that. The issue with the Eagles is this: the talent is so thin at the club right now. They need as many young, talented players coming in as they can possibly get, and getting them all coming in at the same
time. So quantity over quality.
Well, but if you're getting multiple first round draft selections, it's still quality. It's not like to say you're going to move off pick one and you're going to get two or three players at the back end of the draft.
Right.
You could potentially move off pick one and have picked up two or three top end players instead of just Harley Reid. You take Harley Reid out this weekend and you drop in, insert any player, Christian Petrarca, Marcus Bontempelli, Lachie Neale, whoever you want. Then it's not changing anything. They're right. Still losing by 7, 8, 9, 10 plus goals every week. You can't, one kid is not going to turn it around. Now, the area where I kind of understand them not doing it is because he could, as we all know, could grow into a Chris Judd type.
Right.
He could be a superstar of the competition, as he's coming with enormous hype and expectation. How would that look in, forget 10 years' time, in 4 years' time, if he's the best player in the league and they said, we don't want you, we're going to take this guy, this guy, this guy, and maybe only one or two of them work out? I understand it. So that's probably why they didn't do it, and I get that. But going forward for this year, it looks like they're going to get the number one pick again.
Yes.
I would be stunned if they got that pick and didn't move off it this year and try to bring in two or three, depending on how they can work a deal out, to bring in a couple of extra players to grow with Harley Reid, grow with Ruben Ginby and some of these other younger players to come through together.
Say a pick four, a pick 10 and a pick 30.
Well, I think it's just got to be whatever the highest bid is. Okay. I mean, there are other teams out there that'll be eyeing off higher draft selections, and they're not the only team that's struggling. They're not the only team that'll be wanting to bring in young players, talented young players. So I think the issue is it's just too thin at the moment. They need to bring it is. It's about volume at the moment. We've seen it before with clubs.
Yeah. West Coast fans, let us know what you think at Twitter. We are at Footy Tips, Jake.
You mentioned Gather Round off the top. It's the weekend for fans, or it's, at least it's supposed to be, a weekend where everyone heads over to Adelaide and watches their team play. But it seems like it's become one for the airlines, and pretty quickly. We're only two years into this,
yes.
And it is. It feels like it's become one for the airlines, where they charging just crazy prices for people to get over there. Mm-hmm. So I guess it begs the question, can fans get to Adelaide in a relatively affordable way, or is it really a weekend for the airlines.
Answer me this off the top of your head. What did Disney get charged for your weekend away?
I would have to check, but it's not. It wasn't cheap.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think when flights were first announced for Gather Round, I remember doing some research, having a look.
Yep.
And immediately, I think flights were could have been as high as $800 return. Mm. And this is from Melbourne. So depending on where you are in around Australia, it was always going to be quite expensive.
And for context, that's triple the normal kind of going rate.
The going rate, yeah, absolutely. And I think later on, prices fluctuated a little bit. There was one point where I think you were researching and you said it was cheaper to get to Los Angeles for the weekend than it was to Adelaide from Melbourne, which is just crazy. And look, I know that last minute is not going to work for everyone, especially families. You've got to organise yourselves. But, you know, flights for, you know, Thursday, this is when we're recording, Thursday afternoon, coming back Sunday, could now be had for as little as $500 with some airlines like Rex, Jetstar. But the fact that if you want a family of four to go over and you're paying, let's just say somewhere in the middle there, $750 per person.
Yeah.
That's $3,000.
That's $3,000 for the family.
And you're going to have to go. So I'm looking at hotels now as well. So hotels, did a bit of research for this. Mostly we're around $300 to $400 per night minimum to be anywhere near Adelaide Oval and near the CBD.
So then if you are a family and you're going to want two nights and two rooms.
Yes.
If you're a family of four, say, you can add another $2,000 on.
So it's suddenly becoming a $5,000 weekend.
Just for flights accommodation. And then you've got to add on your tickets, your food, your transport, anything else you want to do. It's become an extremely expensive weekend.
And the problem with that is, which company is one of the AFL's major or premier partners? It's Virgin Australia. And they're not even close to being the cheapest flights to and from into Adelaide and out of Adelaide for this weekend. And I just think that when you can kind of buddy-buddy up with a company like Virgin Australia, and like the AFL has, and then they're going out of their way to not, I don't want to say the word extort, but they're not playing ball. They're not sort of saying, hey, this is gather round where everyone can get to it. And I think that relationship leaves a bit of a sour taste in the mouth. And the fact that it's going to cost, let's just say, like we said, a family of four to get to Adelaide, you know, upwards of $3,000-$5,000 perhaps. I think it's just a little bit on the nose.
I think families are better off heading to Bali. I think you're going to get more value heading there for a long weekend. I agree. I think the airlines really need to come to the party here, particularly Virgin for the partnership, as you said. And it's become already in 2 years, it's become an extremely expensive weekend, and you risk pricing too many families and too many people out.
I know people who are flying from Melbourne to Sydney to Adelaide to get there. I know people who are driving, which also might be a more cost-beneficial way to get there. But at the end of the day, when your major partner is an airline, the AFL needs to have a strongly worded sit-down with them and just say, hey, it's called Gather Round for a reason. Jake, the Tigers should strongly consider trading Tom Lynch at the end of the season. I can't believe you've put this on the agenda, but you're really strong about this.
Well, I think if you think about it and give it some time, the answer is quite clearly yes, they should consider it. Seriously consider it. I guess there are a few little areas we can go here, so this might sound like it's a little bit all over the place, but bear with us. the issue with Tom Lynch at the Tigers right now is he's injury prone, but he's also not fitting where this list is going in terms of the age profile.
Right.
He's currently 31. Obviously 32 going into next year, and which will be his final year of his contract, and then 33 for any subsequent years.
So he signed until the end of 25.
25, and that was the big seven-year deal that got him to the club when he left the Suns. So I think the Tigers, given what we know now about the Tigers, and I think it's quite clear that they are looking at, whether you want to call it a mini rebuild or a full-blown rebuild, they are in a position where they are going to need to bring in some of those younger players that we were talking about before, and find players that can be in a similar age bracket to players like Tim Taranto and Jacob Hopper and Shea Bolton, who are in their mid-20s.
Yes.
That's more of the list profile that I think the club needs to look at.
So there are a couple of issues here. Firstly, it's that he's being paid a lot of money.
Yeah.
So it's back-ended. So the second one is, I'll let you expand on both of these points. The second is, he'll be 32. So his value will be to, it's not going to be to another building team. It's going to be to a contender.
Yeah.
Will they be willing, and would they have cap space to take on such a big name in a contract?
Well, So I think there's quite clearly most teams are going to want a Tom Lynch to come in. If he's healthy, he's one of the best key forwards in the league. Sure, I don't think anyone's debating that. But as you said, the issue is around his contract. His contract that he initially signed was back-ended financially, which means most of the money that was coming, I think it was around a $900,000 per season contract. It began at $500,000 a year. So most of that money's coming in the back end. So he's looking at close to $1.5 million a season for his final year, which is next year, 2025. The issue is, who can pay that?
Well, the Tigers will probably have to pay some.
They would have to pay some, but and would they want to pay? And where's the line for how much they will pay?
What are you getting in? So we've looked at aging stars being traded out of clubs before. You kind of think of Sam Mitchell. Jordan Lewis was another one. They didn't get much at the trade table. How much do you realistically think Tom Lynch is worth?
Well, what would a club... There's two Victorian-based clubs that spring to mind in terms of two teams that we either think are good or we know are good that don't have a clear-cut key forward, and that's Collingwood and Melbourne. Would both of those teams take Tom Lynch, and what would they give up for him?
That's a great call. I think there are some other teams that he could well be suited to. I think Fremantle needs a key forward that can be a bit more reliable. I mean, we talked about his injury woes, but Adelaide, so Taylor Walker, kind of in a similar, a few years more advanced, but is starting to, you can sort of see him starting to slow down a bit. Brisbane, you could possibly replace someone like an Eric Hipwood. I know that he's popular with some of the fans, but hasn't really been sort of, I guess, playing at the level or the standard that we expect. So there are definitely options out there, but again, it's kind of, you look at the money, and you look at what you'd be giving up to get him in the door.
The money is going to make it tricky. Obviously, he would need to agree to any of this because he is still under contract. But I think it's quite clear that if all of those other boxes were checked, Richmond would be doing a disservice to Lynch and themselves by not entertaining such an option.
I'm afraid to ask, but Richmond fans, please let us know what you think on X or Twitter at Footy Tips.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Something a little bit lighter, and I know something up your alley. Gather round jumpers, going back to a gather round. What's been your favourite one so far?
I'm liking the trend of clubs coming out with specific gather round jumpers.
Think it should be a permanent?
I think they should be encouraging every team to come out with something a bit fun. So obviously we saw Frio's stealth one, which they had last year. The Eagles are going to throw back to 1995 with that sort of navy darker blue with the yellow wings, I guess, on the side. I think that's a ripper.
It looks good in the long sleeves too, that one.
The GWS charcoal, so they're bringing that back again. They've worn that a few times, and it's one of my favourite, I think, in the entire competition.
Yep.
The Saints, the candy stripes as well. So there have been some really good ones. I think the Eagles one's probably the best.
Oh, you've taken mine.
I agree. I think it's absolutely stunning. And I think that all clubs should be making an effort to do something a bit special for gathering. I mean, and one I threw up sort of half seriously was, the Gold Coast Suns. Yep. Why can't they do like a UV jumper and have like a fluoro purple number and they run out against the Giants or something like that? Yep. Like, you can have a bit of fun with it. It's not like it's going to be Heritage Round or any of these other ones where you kind of got to stick to certain rules. I think Gather Round could be an opportunity for these clubs to really have a bit of creative license.
Yeah, I'm surprised they don't. You see in other sports, like look at the NBA, for example.
Yeah.
Every time you watch a team, they're wearing they're wearing a different jersey. So I'm surprised they don't do it more in the AFL. If for anything, to sell more jerseys. I mean, you could have a gather round and every club has a special jersey and you buy it for that event. So I agree. I think it's something that all clubs should do because it is a bit, I don't know if tacky is the right word, but it doesn't quite land as well when there's only half the clubs
buying it.
It'd be much better if everyone was doing it, 100%.
One more on gather round. If the AFL had its time again, considering the schedule we know about gather round now. So the last game of the weekend is Hawthorn and Collingwood at Adelaide Oval. But it could be a bit chippy now.
Well, I think it was always going to be chippy.
After, I guess, the trade period,
Trade period.
So we knew what the teams were going to look like. But now there's a bit of added spice. So the Jack Ginnivan stuff, obviously. The Pies have struggled. The Hawks are struggling. And it looks like it could be, if the Hawks upset them, an absolute doozy of a contest. Mm. So, if they had its time, if the AFL had its time again, would they have scheduled that for the MCG and 80,000 people?
I think they would have. Mm. And I wonder whether... I think we give too much credit to the AFL, and not just the AFL, but all leagues in the sense that we know what they're they know what they're doing 100% of the time. Is it crazy to say that this was just an oversight?
They just dropped the ball? I'm with you on this. So I've got a theory. There's a couple of other oversights I think that we've noticed throughout the first sort of month or two of the fixturing. Yeah. So obviously, opening round was supposed to coincide with the Vegas thing. Wasn't the same weekend, but they explained that it would have been too early to start it on the Vegas weekend, and they wanted to take advantage of fewer games in Sydney and Brisbane for opening round. That's fine. What I don't get was, it was a public holiday Monday that day in Victoria, and so there was no football on Sunday after opening round. Yep. And all of a sudden, you've got this complete sort of like the momentum has been completely lost by having only the four games. And you just got to think that was just an oversight, because you wouldn't think, like, consider that and think, oh, no, we won't do anything with that if given the chance again.
I think our brain is programmed to think, oh, there must be a reason for that. There must be a reason why they've done this or haven't done that.
They're probably preoccupied with making sure that teams play each other once, and then they play, you know, the bottom six plays the bottom six, the middle six, etc. They're probably too preoccupied with the actual fixturing to look at the dates and the calendar a lot of the time, and it's probably excusable, but still, I'd like to see that fixed for next year.
No, I think definitely. I think having, obviously, Jack Ginnivan, the eyes will be on him, and to have those two teams, two big fan bases, all the MCG, all eyes on Jack Ginnivan, I think, I 100%. I think they've missed a trick here, I'll put it down to a little bit of an oversight. Last question of the day.
Yes.
Streakers. Are we seeing more streakers than we ever have?
Yeah, I think this is my fault. I've written this down. But are they streakers or are they pitch invaders? I think to streak, you probably have to have your clothes off, right?
I don't think so. Okay. I think you're streaking. If I come running through the office, am I streaking? I don't think I need to take my clothes off.
No, I think if you've got your clothes off, you're streaking through the office. I don't know. But anyway.
I think you can be a streaker either way.
Streakers.
We have seen a lot of them in the first few rounds.
Yep.
The AFL's contracted security and the security guards seems to be a little comical with what we've seen from them in trying to round up these pitch invaders / streakers. Are they up to the job?
No, I don't think they are. And I think this is a very, very simple no, because if you look at, I mean, and no offence to some of these guys, but they probably roll up to their job thinking, well, I just need to patrol the boundary line. I just need to look over, look menacing, and that's my job. But when someone actually forces them to do something, you see the no offence to some of these guys, but they'd be, you know, 55 plus. Look like they've had a few beers over their time, and they're waddling after these young, fit guys with their phones out. And you know why these young, fit guys are jumping onto the
turf? Because they know they're not going to be
grabbed
around
the
collar.
And so, you know, for a lot of the time, they will actually get there, and it's not 15 seconds. It's a good minute of fame. Saw the guy at Adelaide Oval he was in the contest and was out filming it. So obviously he knew that he was going to get enough airtime to make it all worthwhile. And some of the biggest problem is with streaking and with pitch invaders is they think they can get away with it to an extent.
If you had
younger, fitter people with footy boots on. I'll say that as well, because they always slip over for some reason. With footy boots on, chasing these guys down, I can guarantee you wouldn't be seeing as many pitch invaders as what we've seen in the opening few rounds. And it's been an epidemic.
Oh, it's been embarrassing, really. And I think as a security guard, whether it's the footy or any sporting event or any event, really, you as you said, you rock up thinking 99.9% of my job is sitting down and not doing anything. But the 0.1% that you actually need to do something, it never seems to be known what to do.
Yeah.
You have someone running in one direction, you have someone else running in another direction, you have someone on a walkie-talkie, you have another person slipping over. There's no communication. There doesn't seem to be any understanding of what to do. And as someone sitting on the boundary line at a game of footy, your sole responsibility should be you jump into action when someone runs on the field, and we don't seem to see it. It's just, it's quite embarrassing. It's extraordinary.
Last thing on this, I think streakers and pitch invaders is a fascinating topic, but obviously when the players had to go off for the Lightning in the area on
Easter
Monday.
We didn't get
Monday,
to touch on that on Tuesday.
No. But obviously everyone had to leave, so there weren't many security guards nearby, so fans just came on the ground. Did you see the vision of that one guy who...
Wait, so security guards... They weren't there for the fourth quarter?
So there was one guy who got on with his footy and started snapping the ball. And having kicks at goal. And it took, I reckon, about 45 seconds for the security guys to realise, and then they had to come back on.
It's just, it's embarrassing.
Anyway, that's red time for another week. Jake, I've really enjoyed coming on a Thursday with you. We'll do it again next week before Jared's back.
Yeah.
But otherwise, I'll see you on Tuesday as well.
Safe travels, Jared, as well.
Safe travels to you for Gather Round. Enjoy the footy. As always, keep up with everything that Jake writes. We've got a great team of writers as well. Ron Connolly at espn.com.au/AFL. And we'll speak to you in the next episode.
Thanks for joining us on the ESPN Footy Pod. Make sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.